how does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Medical care in the months leading up to giving birth is essential for moms and new babies. But incarcerated pregnant women in Illinois say that they aren't getting the prenatal care that they need. And in the worst case scenario, many incarcerated mothers are separated from their babies right after giving birth. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. These disturbing conditions are outlined in a new report from the ACLU and the Women's Justice Institute. Women in jails across Illinois report a lack of vitamins and adequate food that make it hard to maintain a healthy pregnancy while under the care of the state's correctional facilities. Now, in some cases, this led to underweight and risky births for mothers. In a few minutes, we'll hear from a former WBEZ criminal justice reporter, Shannon Heffernan. She's now a reporter at the Marshall Project. But first, I sat down with one of the authors of the report, Alexis Mansfield, who's also senior advisor at the Women's Justice Institute, and Aaliyah Thomas, who was pregnant when she was held at Will County Jail in 2020. Alexis starts by explaining how, in a way, jails operate as their own fiefdom. Here's Alexis.
In Illinois, we have 102 counties, and we have over 90 jails. While there are state laws that govern how people are supposed to be treated when they're pregnant in custody, everybody is responsible, each of those jails, for making their own policies. And there's no legal requirement even to have a policy. But the fear is that when you don't, what happens is that sometimes those laws are not followed and that best practices don't happen.
Yeah. Illinois does have standards for how people should be treated in detention. And separately, the Illinois Reproductive Health Act, it extends protections to pregnant people. So why are we still seeing mistreatment?
I think that some of that comes from a lack of knowledge and that our laws honestly just don't go far enough. For instance, Illinois was the first state in the nation to ban the use of restraints while somebody was in labor, a law that passed in 1999 that's been in effect since the year 2000. And in 2012, we passed a law in the state of Illinois that says that people who are pregnant and detained are not to be restrained throughout pregnancy, except for some really extraordinary circumstances. But that law only applies to Cook County, even though pregnancy is the same throughout the state. What we have is some inconsistencies within the law, and then just a lack of knowledge in some of the jails around the state about what is supposed to happen and not supposed to happen when somebody is pregnant.
Let's turn to you now, Aaliyah. You were pregnant while you were in jail in 2020, and now you have a three-year-old daughter. Tell us about her.
She's amazing. She's so much fun.
What's her name?
Amina.
Amina? Is she full of energy?
Yes.
What does she like? What is she into?
She loves dinosaurs, sharks. She loves Baby Shark.
Baby Shark, yeah. That's a big one.
And Frozen. Anything that has to do with, you know, Elsa or Anna. That's her thing right there.
And she loves the songs that go with those, right?
For sure.
But you spent your entire pregnancy with Amina at the jail in Will County. So tell us what it was like being pregnant behind bars.
I mean, being pregnant is hard as it is, you know, for anybody, no matter which pregnancy it is. Being in jail on top of it makes it 10 times worse. You know, you got thin mats, you got rude staff members, you know, you don't have appropriate medical care, you know, the list can go on forever.
You told our producers that you were treated worse while you were pregnant than when you weren't pregnant. I mean, how so? What was the treatment like?
Well, you deal with staff more often, so they can be, like, really rude. You know, I've had staff members say that they don't believe me that I'm pregnant because I'm fat, or I've had one CO say because I couldn't eat because I used to get really sick with my daughter. She said she told me I was selfish for not eating because I wasn't able to keep nothing down. So I only ate what I could keep down. you know, so you have more interaction with the staff who are really, like, rude.
Did you have, at the time, any idea where this could be coming from and why, now that you're pregnant, that things seem to have shifted for the worse?
I mean, it's, like I said, officers are never nice, you know. The majority of them, I should say, there are some nice officers. But like I said, with the more interaction that you have, whether it's going to and from doctor's appointments or ultrasounds or anything like that, you know, you have to deal with the COs, like, right next to you. You know, they're transporting you and whatnot. Yeah. So they're like, you have to hear more of their rudeness more often than if you weren't pregnant.
More opportunity for friction.
Yeah.
Alexis, you have talked to many women about their stories in jail. I mean, how does Aaliyah's experience compare to what you've been hearing from other people?
Well, unfortunately, Aaliyah's story is not unusual. The fact that she was kept in custody throughout her pregnancy and then released to go give birth and then to turn herself back in shortly after giving birth, I believe, what, Aaliyah, for 4 weeks?
Yeah, around just about, that. Yep.
And that's, so you were, I want to make sure we all got that. So you were released in order to give birth?
Yeah, a medical furlough.
But you had to turn yourself back in after giving birth?
Correct.
Yeah. How much time did you get to spend with your baby?
16 days.
16 days.
Yes.
And unfortunately, this is not uncommon. So somehow we keep people in throughout their pregnancies, believe that they need to be detained, they can't be released, and then release them to go give birth, in part so that the cost of that labor and delivery does not fall on the county, and expect them to turn themselves back in, which makes you wonder why somebody couldn't be released throughout their pregnancy. The stories that Aaliyah has shared, too, about not having enough nutrition, about weight loss. Aaliyah, how much did you lose while you were inside?
I lost 67 pounds.
And is it, was your daughter underweight when she was
correct.
Born?
When I was, like, about 5 months, I went to go get an ultrasound, and the ultrasound tech, she told me that my baby's below average on the weight side on what she should be.
Mm-hmm. How is she now, though?
She's perfect, you know. Okay.
Yeah. But my goodness. And as part of the research, Alexis, I mean, you reached out to all the county jails in Illinois, right? And you kind of asked simply, share what policies you have on the books when it comes to caring for pregnant people.
We did. We reached out to all 102 counties, whether or not they have a jail, because they're still responsible for people who are arrested in that county. And we asked about pregnancy. We asked about access to menstrual products, about testing for STIs, about access to abortion, all of those issues. We had to follow up quite a few times. We issued Freedom of Information Act requests. Mm-hmm. And we followed up until exactly 98 out of the 102 responded, which is more than had ever been gathered before. Unfortunately, a lot of those responses just did not contain the information that we were seeking, either because the officer who responded did not know where that information could be found, which is a problem in itself because if people don't know the policies, or those policies simply did not exist.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
All right, well, let's turn to another voice on this topic. Shannon Heffernan is a reporter at the Marshall Project. Now, before this, she was a WBEZ criminal justice reporter. Hi, Shannon. Welcome back to Reset.
Hi, so good to be here.
So as we talk about reproductive and prenatal care, we also need to discuss access to abortions. And you recently reported on what that access actually looks like behind bars. It seems like there's quite a few barriers. So tell us what you found.
So some of this was based on the report that was done in Illinois by the ACLU and the Women's Justice Institute. They looked at 92 county jails, and only 28 of them provided a written policy regarding abortion. Written policies are really important because without a written policy, you know, you're kind of left to the whims of staff, right? But you also need oversight and enforcement of those policies. Mm-hmm. The policies that did exist, and we looked both in Illinois and nationwide, and it was pretty consistent. A lot of them were confusing or hard to understand. And those that did exist had, some of them had major barriers to accessing abortion, like requiring that the woman arrange for the abortion herself, even though she's in jail, and pay for the abortion herself, even though she's in jail. And that's a really big barrier for people trying to access abortion.
Absolutely. Yeah, in Illinois, we have the Reproductive Health Act, which is meant to protect reproductive care for women, and it includes both abortion and maternity care. So what's going on here?
Well, one big barrier, particularly for women who are in prison, is Medicaid coverage, right? So people who are in jail are disproportionately poor, but Medicaid coverage stops when you go into jail. So even if you live in a state like Illinois, where Medicaid does cover abortion, not all states do, but it does in Illinois, you're kind of out of luck. You're not going to be able to get that abortion paid for through Medicaid. And that can have high expenses. Also, some of the jail policies in Illinois require that a woman not only pay for the abortion, but pay for the officer's time and pay for the transportation. So you're looking at that bill getting pretty high pretty quickly.
So Shannon, you've done extensive reporting in the past on care that people receive in jails and prisons. One thing that you've often found is that jails and prisons are only required to provide the minimum level of care. Talk a bit more about why that is, and what does the minimum actually look like?
So the minimum in practice can be very, very thin, and that matters when we're talking about abortion access. One of the women we interviewed was this woman named Paige. She's also featured in the report you all are talking about. Paige had a very high-risk pregnancy. The scar tissue had attached to her placenta from a previous procedure, and she knew medical care in jail was going to be really poor because she had come into jail with a gunshot wound, and she had been late to appointments and had problems. So she was like, I have this high-risk pregnancy. I can't do this in jail. She also had trouble getting access to nutritional food. You're supposed to get good nutritional food if you're a pregnant woman. You're supposed to get extra calories. They often just forgot to give her that extra snack, according to Paige's account.
Right.
She was late to appointments all the time. So you can see how when this care is really poor in jail and prisons, it's going to especially affect pregnant women.
So Paige actually sent a message to the jail formally requesting an abortion. What response did she get?
Just an emoticon with a sad face, which is very troubling and very confusing. She didn't know what that meant. Did that mean I'm sad that you want an abortion? Did that mean I'm sad we can't provide it to you? And
wow.
She never was able to get an abortion in jail. And this sort of goes back to the importance of those written policies. Even though she should have been able to access one, staff were making decisions on the fly.
So they didn't say any actual words? It was just a sad face?
According to Paige's account, they did not say any actual words. We did ask Winnebago County Jail about this. They did not respond clearly to our questions and said that Paige's medical records weren't something they could discuss.
So, I mean, with all of that in mind, Shannon, is this report in line with what you've come to expect in the care that's provided for detainees when they're in jail?
Yes, I think it's very much in line with what we've seen from other reporting we've done historically in Illinois prisons and jails, which shows that, you know, medical care is very, very thin. Constitutionally, you're supposed to be able to provide people with care that's in line with what they can get in the community. But in practice, that's just not what happens. There's not enough staff to transfer people to appointments. There's not enough medical staff on hand to take care of people. And so that's going to affect everyone, but especially pregnant people who are going to need more of that care and need that care more quickly.
I know we're focused on Illinois, but you've looked at other states. How do we compare?
Yeah, so we looked at 27 jails across 12 states, and it varies widely county to county what people are able to obtain because there's no central standards. And I think Illinois, even though it's a state that's sort of famous, especially in the Midwest, for having good reproductive policies, the care they provided to pregnant women was just as troubling as what we saw in other states in terms of there not being clear policies, in terms of people being shackled when they shouldn't be. Honestly, I think was surprising to me to see that Illinois' reproduction for strong reproductive care did not transfer to its jails.
That's Shannon Heffernan with the Marshall Project. Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you.
Aaliyah Thomas and Alexis Mansfield are still with us. First, I got to get your reactions to what you just heard Shannon say. You first, Alexis.
I think she's absolutely correct. We think of ourselves as kind of the safeguards of reproductive justice in the country, and yet we're not applying that to everyone.
Yeah. What about you, Aaliyah? Especially the part where Shannon talked about how the state is only, you know, obligated to provide the minimum of care when you're behind bars.
Actually, I heard a couple of COs kind of like laugh at that, like, y'all only get the minimum care, so what do you expect? You're not going to get the top of the line care just because you're pregnant. Like, okay, I said it millions of times before, I understand I'm in jail, you know, so, but at the same time, like, can I be treated like a human at least, you know?
If your daughter wants to know the story of her birth down the line, how do you think that you would talk to her about it?
Honestly, I'm not even sure where to start with that, you know, because I never really thought about that because, you know, she is at a really young age. But I know eventually she's going to want to know about the past because, you know, no matter what, as parents, we do, like, and keep something from our child, like, eventually they're going to find out, especially when several people know.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a public thing that they know I've been incarcerated and stuff like that, so.
Well, what do you want people to know about when it comes to being a mom or an expectant mom in Illinois jail?
You're going to go through a hard time, you know? So learn your rights before it's too late because they won't teach you.
You know, after these findings, Alexis, I mean, what are your recommendations to the state and counties? What should they do with this information?
Yeah, my hope is that we can work together, honestly, the sheriffs, the counties, all of us, advocates and people who are directly impacted. The report makes a couple of recommendations. The first is simply follow the law.
Yeah.
One of those laws is that people who are pregnant in custody are supposed to get education. And as we just heard from Aaliyah, that's not what happened.
No.
She was not informed of her rights or even what was going on as a first-time mom with her pregnancy. The second recommendation, or the first actual recommendation, because following the law is just something that should happen.
Right.
But the first recommendation is that we ban shackling statewide and the use of restraints statewide against people who are pregnant or postpartum. It should not just be Cook County. This is something that we really need to do as a state. And the second is that we need a task force to look into these issues because so much is unknown. We don't even know how many people are pregnant in jail each year. We have no idea.
Oh, we
Nobody's
don't.
Collecting that information. We don't know how many births. We don't know how many miscarriages. None of that is tracked. So that's the second one. And I will say that we have pending legislation to make a lot of these changes under HB 5431, which is right now on the floor of the Illinois House. And that would do a lot of what we're talking about, as well as posting people's rights to make sure that they know what they are and so that staff knows what they are, too.
This is striking. Just the fact that we aren't tracking this?
That's really what the report showed us, is how much we don't know.
Wow.
And how much we do need to know.
Are there better models out there for pre and postnatal care for incarcerated women that you think that we could learn from here in Illinois?
I think that the recommendations that ACOG gives us that talks about what should be best practices, things like supplemental nutrition, 300 supplemental calories a day, not during mealtimes. Those recommendations and best practices, which we describe in the report, are things we can learn from. And
yeah.
They talk about shackling and the impact and the health impacts, both on moms and on their pregnancies in general. And so we can look to those, and we have incorporated a lot of those best practices into this pending legislation as well.
We'll leave it there for now. That's Alexis Mansfield, who's senior advisor at the Women's Justice Institute, and Aaliyah Thomas. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Best of luck, Aaliyah.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and edited by Meha Ahmed, and it was mixed by Brenda Ruiz. Want to stay on top of the latest news in Chicago? Well, make sure to sign up for our newsletter at wbez.org/resetnews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely